This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You know, there are a lot of passions. Some days it's sports, other days it's cooking or music, or just diving into a great documentary. The thing is, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Amazon Prime isn't just about fast delivery. Though getting stuff the same day is pretty great. But it turns out it's so much more. Prime Video, Amazon Music, the whole range of services. It's like a hub for all kinds of curiosity. Prime helps people stay connected to what matters and keeps the journey of exploration going. Whether it's watching something inspiring, listening to a new artist, or getting gear delivered fast to chase a new hobby. Prime makes it easier to dive in. So yeah, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to get more out of whatever sparks interest. Amazon.com/Prime.
Can't get enough baseball? Start streaming MLB Network today. Get up to 15 out-of-market games a week live on any device, plus 24/7 access to MLB Network's award-winning shows, including live game look-ins and exclusive player interviews. And hear live radio play-by-play from all 30 clubs with MLB at Bat. Enjoy the home of baseball from virtually anywhere. Plans start as low as $5.99 per month. Sign up now at MLBNetwork.com/stream.
Available in the U.S. only. Blackout restriction applies. Visit MLB.com/subscribe for full terms and conditions.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
The Score!
Go.
This hour is being brought to you by Vasectomy Clinics of Chicago.
Brian Baldinger, NFL analyst for the NFL Network and Fox Sports, host of Baldy's Breakdown.
And if you're Ben Johnson coming in, you can't ask for anything more as a first-year head coach. Let's get this competition going right now. In minicamp, in OTAs, take it into training camp, and let's get the best people on the field when we kick this season off.
Odyssey NFL Insider.
I think Caleb right now is in a good spot with a good coach, and whatever happened a year ago or a little bit longer than a year ago, I mean, it's just, you know, those kind of things can resurface. I don't think it has anything to do with what the Bears are trying to build right now.
Brian Baldinger on 670 The Score.
It's Mark Rohde and Dan Wiederer in for Rahimi and Harris. Both Layla and Marshall have the day off today, so we are in and we are excited to talk more Bears, more NFL. We are indeed joined by Odyssey NFL Insider Brian Baldinger, host of the Best Football Show podcast. Make sure to check out the Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast. Baldy, what's going on, man?
Well, getting ready for a nice holiday weekend, get the summer kicked off here. So just like everybody else, looking to get a little relaxation in.
Well, I saw you on television the other day, man. You got a great tan going on. Are you near an ocean right now, I'm guessing?
I'm right on the ocean, yes. Yeah, I'll be diving here in about for some lionfish in about the next hour, as soon as I get off the phone here.
Oh, okay. Are you actually outside on the beach? Because I know you've been known to break it down before while in the ocean, right?
Well, I have to. I'm shark diving tomorrow, so I want to work on my breath holding here a little bit here today.
Are you serious?
So I was going to do some ups and downs here.
Are you seriously going shark diving?
I'm going to Jupiter. Yeah, I'm diving with some tiger sharks and bull sharks, and we're going to jump in the waters out there. I'm jumping in tomorrow at 8 a.m.
Hold on. Those are like the nastiest possible sharks, aren't those the most aggressive sharks that you can be around, Brian?
They're aggressive. Yeah. They're aggressive. I feel pretty good about the people I'm going with, though. So
okay.
I'm putting a lot of trust in those people's hands.
Okay. All right. Well, you be safe out there. And I mean that when I say that,
yeah.
Baldy. Okay. All right.
Okay.
Baldy, what does Caleb Williams have to do to take the next level in his progress from what you saw last year?
Well, you can't play at the frenetic pace that he played at last year. where every single drop back looked like it was, you know, he was, you know, running for his life. I mean, he was sacked 68 times. Some of it was his fault. But, you know, he just needs to get the ball out a little bit more frequently on rhythm and timing. That would help a lot. It would help if the design of the offense was a whole lot better than anything we saw last year. So, I mean, I do think some of that's going to help. And, you know, the offensive line should be improved so that, you know, he's not literally dropping back, hitting his third step or his fifth step, and then just literally running like it's like he's a bat out of hell. Like he's got to stop that. And if you're watching that and you're seeing that on Sundays on any regular basis, then things aren't going well.
Baldy, great to talk to you again. I'm wondering what you find most intriguing about the union between Ben and Caleb and what that potentially could do for both guys as they try to make this work.
Well, I mean, I've only known Ben Johnson since he took over the offensive coordinator job in Detroit 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And in those 3 years, Jared Goff put together three great years in a row. You know, something that no Bear quarterback has ever done, thrown for over 4,000 yards easily every year. But I do think he has a very unique style about how to game plan and how to best move the football. And sometimes it's by formation. Sometimes it's by route combination. Sometimes it's by deception, heavy deception. And then sometimes it's just like, let's just knock these guys off the ball and let's run it. And then let's run some play action passes off it. I mean, I think some of it is kind of basic and sound, but at the same time, there's a lot of creativity to really taking advantage of what the defense does or the pattern you think the defense is going to play based on routes, formations, and route combinations, and what he thinks the defense is going to do, and then how he counters that.
Obviously, you know the upgrades they made to the offensive line, particularly on the interior, in the month of March. What is the biggest plus that you see happening for the offense at large, and obviously Caleb, with that interior being as sturdy as it seems to be right now?
Well, I think there's going to be a lot of competition. I mean, Ryan Bates has been a starter in this league. He's a backup right now. You know, I mean, I think there's going to be competition across the front. Army Gagey, let's see what he looks like in his second year. Didn't get a chance to play much last year. Let's see the development and the strength. Let's see if Drew Dahlman and Jonah Jackson can stay healthy for a whole year. Because I do think they're upgrades if they do. Tooney is a stud, and he'll make everybody better. Let's see if Braxton Jones and Darnell Wright can take a step up this year. With what they want to do. Now, they both have to improve based on what we've seen. But, I mean, if the competition is good and the guys that I just mentioned improve, then this should be an improved front. And if it is, it should be the foundation to everything that they do next year.
I want to stay with the offensive line for a second because you're right, man. That's a good way to put it, a lot of competition. And at this very moment, we don't know who's going to be the Bears' left tackle. You know, Braxton Jones is the incumbent, but he has been injured. So we did see another guy that you just mentioned, Karan Amagaji, was the guy, at least in the OTA, that the media was allowed to see. Karan Amagaji was playing the left tackle spot. And that also brings me to Darnell Wright, who is the right tackle, but we have been told that it's not out of the question that they could change Darnell Wright or switch Darnell Wright from the right side to the left side. Would you mess with that? Because there has been success for Darnell Wright on the right side.
Well, it's not my first option, but if I'm trying to get the best five players on the field, I would consider it. I have not seen Darnell play left tackle. I've seen him at Tennessee play right, and I've seen him in Chicago play right tackle. It's not to say that he can't. Many guys have made the switch, some successful, some not so successful. But my goal this whole offseason and through the preseason is to get the best five players on the field. And whatever combination that is right now, that's what they have to concentrate on doing. There was a time when Ben Johnson was in Detroit when they were running Taylor Decker out of Detroit and they were going to put Penei Sewell at left tackle. And he did go over there when Decker did get injured for a while. But they fought that, and they ended up playing their best five guys week in, week out. And so and they left Decker alone. So that's their mission right now. That's what has to be part of the evaluation process every day, is to make sure they get the five healthiest and best players on that group up front.
That's a great reminder. I mean, that's a great reference to Detroit, and that's, you know, that's the smart thing to do, and that we're doing a lot of that too, because obviously coaches will learn from where they are and then typically bring that to the team in which they exist. That said, Ozzie Trapillo was a second-round draft pick of the Bears, another guy who played right tackle, but they're talking about him potentially being a left tackle. Did you have a chance to watch Ozzie Trapillo break down any of his tape and what you have seen from the big man?
Well, he's a three-year starter at Boston College in a really good program that turns out a lot of good offensive linemen. I only saw him play right tackle.
Yeah,
I didn't see him play left tackle. I don't know if he practiced there or if he played there and I didn't see it, but I didn't see him play left tackle. He has his strengths in that I think he's very tough. He's very long. I do think he may struggle a little bit with just his size, his height, and being able to get low enough to move some of the immovable objects at defensive tackle and defensive end that play a lot lower than him. I think it's something he's going to have to really concentrate on. But there's a lot to like about him from a protection standpoint. I think he's very good. But I do think in the run game, he might struggle a little bit just because he's 6 foot eight.
Yeah.
It's going to be hard for him to get down and underneath, you know, guys on the defensive front. If he had to go, you know, move Jervon Dexter, you know, a defense tackle, that might be a little challenge for him right now.
All right, Baldy, obligatory NFL question of the week. The tush-push is here to stay for 2025, but two-thirds of the teams in the league were pushing to get rid of it. Where do you come down on that play and its purpose in the sport?
It's a great play. And, you know, the teams that don't execute it well simply don't understand physics. The Eagles practice that play more than any other play in their whole playbook. When you do that and you execute the way they do, you shouldn't have that play removed simply because you're excellent at it. And other teams that try it have no idea how to do it. And trying to get it crossed out of the league, that's wrong. The Eagles perfected the play. They work on the play. Let other teams work on it. Let them put the emphasis on the play. Walk through it. Talk through it. Practice it every single day. Walk through it in the training room, in the off season, during the season. Get ready for a Super Bowl. They never stop working on that play. So to take that play out simply because it doesn't look like an NFL play or it looks gimmicky or it looks like a scrum, it doesn't to the Philadelphia Eagles, not at all.
Yeah, very, very specific to the Philadelphia Eagles, no doubt about it. We're being joined by Odyssey NFL insider Brian Baldinger on the Raheemi and Harris Show. Mark Grody and Dan Weeder are filling in today. I want to play a little bit of audio for you here, Baldy, and this was Ben Johnson just 2 days ago. Dan and I were both at Halas Hall and talking to the head coach of the Bears, Ben Johnson. Here was his take on the tush push. I want to hear what you think about this.
Man, I tell you what, does it become an explosive play ever? Have you ever seen a tush push become an explosive play?
Does it become a first down or a touchdown?
Yeah, I like explosive play. I like big plays. I like big plays, so I'm not a big tush-push guy myself.
What do you think about that, Baldy?
Well, I think he's missing the point completely. I mean, the point is the Eagles on 3rd and 4 can do whatever they want to do as opposed to any analytics that would tell you that you have to throw it on 3rd and 4. And I'm sure Ben likes to throw it on 3rd and 4. But if you're gaining 3 yards and you're running it, and now you have 4th and 1, and you have a play that converts 90% of the time, you now have the defense in a bind constantly. And so I would disagree with Ben on that completely. I like to explosive plays too. But, you know, quarterbacks, you go a long way in the tush-push if you don't get their legs. You know, Carson Wentz went 42 yards on a quarterback sneak one time because the Commanders didn't grab his legs. That's an explosive play, 42 yards in my book. So I think he's kind of missing the point a little bit personally.
What do you think, look, when people say it, are they just throwing stuff out there when they say that it's a dangerous play?
Yes. Nobody's ever been hurt on the play. In fact, it's almost hard to be hurt on the play. Like, if you've never had an injury on a play, then how can you even surmise that it could be a possibility of an injury? There's a possibility of an injury like Dre Greenlaw going on the field in the Super Bowl game and his Achilles blows out. Yeah. There's a possibility of an injury every single play. But if there's never been an injury on a play, why would you even bring it up?
So why do you think that there was such a push to get rid of it, you know, and that they did use health and safety as sort of the engine to try to get rid of it?
Well, because, you know, they ran it 6 times down against Washington in the NFC Championship game in front of a really large audience. And it looked bad when guys kept jumping off sides. and Frankie Louvo was going over the top, which is the dumbest thing you can do to stop the play. It simply right. isn't good physics
yeah.
to stop that play going over the top. But, you know, I mean, it looked like a bad play when everybody's jumping off sides and Washington is, you know, they're moving the ball 6 inches closer to the goal line. It had a bad look to it. I'm sure the commissioner didn't like it. I'm sure people in the front office of the NFL said, you know, like, let's put this on the table. Let's talk about it. Let's get rid of it. But, you know, ultimately it takes, 24 teams to ratify a change, and they only got 22 votes. So, like a lot of things that get talked about, it didn't get passed.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny because we even asked Grady Jarrett, the Bears defensive lineman, former Falcons defensive lineman, about it. He was like, basically, Dan, he was saying, well, you got to stop it, right?
Yeah.
So he seemed to support it.
He said that he never felt endangered either.
Right. I mean, this is a veteran defensive lineman. And to that end as well, if I may, Baldy, and we're talking to Brian Baldinger, Odyssey NFL insider here on the Score, the Raheem and Harris Show, featuring Mark Grody and Dan Wiederer today. The Bears defensive line, it did improve. There's no doubt about it. When you get Grady Jarrett in here, you drafted Shamar Turner in the second round. Dio Adangbo is here. So in theory, they are better, but they're going with the philosophy of we're going to get better push inside, and that's why it's going to be easier for us to get to the quarterback. At this point, other than Montez Sweat, who had a poor year last year relative to the previous year, Dio Adangbo has not gotten to the quarterback a ton. Do the Bears have a problem right now in terms of getting to the quarterback, or do you think that inside push has improved enough to where theoretically they can get to the quarterback easier this year?
I mean, we'll see what Austin Booker looks like in the second year.
Yeah, him too. Yep.
He was drafted, with the idea that he could develop. I don't think they're a great pass rushing defensive front right now. I feel like they need to blitz in order to get pressure.
Mm-hmm.
Gray Jarrett's been a good player for a long time. I don't know. I think he's in his, double-digit years
yep.
now. I mean, typically those guys don't get a whole lot better after all the snaps. He's a great person. He's a great player. But I wouldn't say that he is an elite pass rusher at this point. We'll see. Billings is a run stopper. Dexter has shown flashes of ability to be able to rush the passer from the interior. But I don't think there's Jalen Carter or Chris Jones, or any of those monsters inside in Chicago right now coming after you.
Baldy, back at the combine, it struck me how many people around the league were encouraged about the addition of Dennis Allen to run the defense as Ben gets things up and running on the offensive side of things. What do you think Dennis's presence here means to everything that we're talking about in terms of the Bears trying to get off the ground and to complement their offense with a defense that can carry the load some weeks?
I don't have any stats in front of me, but does anybody play more man coverage than Dennis Allen? I mean, if I was the corners right here, and I was Jalen, or if I was, Tyreek, or if I'm one of the corners, I mean, I'm going to be locked up and challenging every single pass and every single route. I mean, I like that. I like that style.
They love it,
you
too.
I mean, he's a front four dominant. Kyle Gordon's a hell of a player. He's a great nickel. It really is incumbent upon your front four. And New Orleans has had a number of good pass rushers over the years. Cam Jordan comes to mind. But guys that, were able to get home. But they're going to challenge your receivers. They're going to challenge your quarterbacks with the amount of man coverage that they play. And so, if you're playing the Minnesota Vikings and, there's Justin Jefferson out there and some of those guys, that might be a fun Sunday to go watch some football.
Baldy, I'm hoping the best for you. I assume you've been swimming with those sharks before, right? With the bull sharks? Or is this the first time that you...
I have not. No.
This is the first.
I see sharks all the time, but I have actually jumped in the water with the tiger sharks before, so I don't know how my system is going to react yet. I'm kind of anxious to find out.
Are you going to be able to take pictures of this? Like, is there an under, like, does the guide have an?
I've got a GoPro camera with me. Yeah, I'm going to film the whole thing.
Oh, awesome. So we'll get to see that because I'm like legit, man. I'm looking forward to seeing that.
Me too.
Thank you so much, man. I appreciate it. I'll be looking for those pictures. Be careful, man.
Stay safe.
Yeah, stay safe.
Okay.
All right. There he goes.
Now they're chum in the water, so the sharks, they should be eaten. They should be fine.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, bring the chum, whatever you got to bring. Take care of them.
Yeah. All right, man. Got it, guys.
All right, take care.
Talk soon.
Take care.
Brian Baldinger. He did. He brought the breakdown. Baldy brought the breakdown. That was Odyssey NFL insider Brian Baldinger, host of the Best Football Show podcast. Make sure you check out the Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You know, there are a lot of passions. Some days it's sports, other days it's cooking or music, or just diving into a great documentary. The thing is, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Amazon Prime isn't just about fast delivery. Though getting stuff the same day is pretty great. But it turns out it's so much more. Prime Video, Amazon Music, the whole range of services. It's like a hub for all kinds of curiosity. Prime helps people stay connected to what matters and keeps the journey of exploration going. Whether it's watching something inspiring, listening to a new artist, or getting gear delivered fast to chase a new hobby. Prime makes it easier to dive in. So yeah, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to get more out of whatever sparks interest. Amazon.com/Prime.
Can't get enough baseball? Start streaming MLB Network today. Get up to 15 out-of-market games a week live on any device, plus 24/7 access to MLB Network's award-winning shows, including live game look-ins and exclusive player interviews. And hear live radio play-by-play from all 30 clubs with MLB at Bat. Enjoy the home of baseball from virtually anywhere. Plans start as low as $5.99 per month. Sign up now at MLBNetwork.com/stream.
Available in the U.S. only. Blackout restriction applies. Visit MLB.com/subscribe for full terms and conditions.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333. Did you know that it's proven that attractive people tend to like hot, spicy food? Yes, it's true. Hot people like hot food. Introducing 5-Hour Energy's new spicy Cinco de Mango. This little shot is sweet, spicy, and a tad unhinged. Just like your favorite party guest. It hits with a bold chili flavor, then smooths things out with that juicy mango kick. Honestly, I tried it the other day, and wow, it brought the heat and the hype. Total game changer. Research even says more than half of spicy food fans think they're hot. And you know what? They're not wrong. Hot people like hot food. Get your spice on with 5-Hour Energy Spicy Cinco de Mango. Think you're hot? Prove it with this spicy mango shot. And yes, it even comes with hot sauce. Turn up the heat this Cinco de Mayo or any day because life's too short for bland. You're hot. Your energy shot should be too. Get energized. Get spicy. 5-Hour Energy Spicy Cinco de Mango is here for you. 5-Hour Energy Spicy Cinco de Mango is only available online for a limited time. Head to 5hourenergy.com to order yours today.
Layla Rahimi, Marshall Harris, Rahimi and Harris, middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Here's a drive into the opposite field corner off the bat of Shaw. It's a fair ball. Racing around third, Nico Horner. The relay throw to the plate. Nico slides safe at the plate. RBI double, Matt Shaw.
I mean, it's huge, like, to come back up for my confidence, you know, in general. Obviously, helping me to believe that I can be here and help this team win. And so that's really huge.
That's Cubs third baseman Matt Shaw. Right here on Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. It's the Rahimi and Harris Show. Mark Rohde and Dan Weeder are in today for the guys. So we're with you until 2 o'clock today, at which time, looking forward to seeing Spiegel and Holmes. We'll do transition with them a little bit later on. The Chicago Cubs begin a series at the Cincinnati Reds tonight. 5:40 is when the first pitch is scheduled to be thrown by one Hunter Green, the great pitcher for the Cincinnati Reds. Matthew Boyd is on it for the Cubs, who have won two straight games, while the Cincinnati Reds, one game under 500, have lost two straight games. And we were just talking about it, Dan, and our five on it, that it's really nice. nice, super heartening to see Matthew Boyd come back from the minors, get some work done, and not look overmatched at the major league level. Even in the outs that he has made, that's what I'm watching for, because that was the problem when, you know, they were transparent about it, Jed Hoyer and Craig Counsell, that he just looked like he was trying to survive as his time wound down in his first stint in the bigs this year. They figured something out in the minors, which we'll drill down into here in just a little bit. It's just so important that he continues to do what he is doing with the bat and progress with the glove, because if they can get that position right, it's one less thing they have to worry about, as they do legitimately now, 10 games over 500, make their way towards a playoff run for the Cubs this year.
There's no question, and it's not an easy reset to get off to a slow start, to be sent back to AAA, to try to have to find yourself again and to make real adjustments to what you're doing at the plate. Shaw obviously has done that. You saw what he was doing at the end of the stint in Iowa, just red hot. Yeah. And it was like, okay, now's the time to try it again. Yeah. And now you go into Miami and you get five hits in the first three games back. And then you hope to obviously continue that here through this weekend series. To your point about the position, like if you can get a level of comfort and confidence at third base, now all of a sudden everybody breathes a little bit easier about how well stacked this team is to compete for things that are really meaningful.
Yeah, and I'll give a big thumbs up to the Cubs organization now with two players. And look, Boyd's got a ways to go before we could say, yep, he's on it, he's on track.
He is,
what did I say?
Boyd.
Oh, yeah. They're both Matts. But yes, Matthew Shaw. I'll give credit on him and Pete Crow Armstrong, because they did the same thing with Pete Crow Armstrong last year. He needed to go down. Lord, did he need to go back down last year. Whatever they did with him obviously worked. I mean, we're back a little bit in the box, widen that stance a little bit, comes back, he starts to progress at the end of last season, and now look at PCA.
Yeah, I mean, look at him.
And the more people I hear from that are really watching the games, like beat writers, are saying, yeah, there's some legitimacy to that. It's not quite there yet with Matt Shaw, but good for them to have worked on some very specific things. To that end, let's listen to Ron Coomer of the Cubs broadcast booth on what he has seen with Matt Shaw.
Shaw stands deep in the box, right-handed batter, hits out of a little bit of a crouch, and the pitch. Line drive, smoke to right center field. Sanchez goes back. This one's over his head, bounces on the track and over the wall for an automatic double. Nice piece of hitting for Matt Shaw, one-out double here in the fifth.
Well, he's been able to really use the other side of the diamond since being called back up, and that's a good thing. He gets this slider down, middle of the plate, doesn't try to hook it, just goes with it. You know, and to me, that means he's letting this ball get deep on him, and then he's able to drive it that way. And that's a good swing by Matt. You know, and to do that, your head has to stay still. I thought that was the biggest key for him going down to the minor leagues, was to correct that problem of his head moving so much towards the pitcher. And he is getting that part settled in a little bit. Leg kick, you know, I know they've shortened that a little bit, but at the end of the day, if your head is moving, you cannot hit in our league. And he is doing a much better job. And, you know, I think he's getting some carryover effect, too, at his third base play. He's done a very nice job since coming back up playing third base.
Sometimes it sounds simple, but it really is the key. You have to see the ball to hit the ball.
Well, at the end of the day, you can look at a guy's swing and have a lot of opinions if somebody's doing some things different. But really, first, the golden rule of hitting is you have to see the ball.
Hap looks at a ball low and outside. It's one and two.
And what does that mean in the big leagues? That means seeing it out of the pitcher's hand. That means you're going to be able to figure out what the pitch is, and then tracking the ball to the barrel of the bat and watching it hit the barrel of the bat.
God, that's so good, because there's so many times where, Dan, we don't know the specifics, the why. Like, why is this guy, and we all kind of guess, and as Coomer said, he put it pretty bluntly there. Ron Coomer, Zach Zabin on the score, talking there about Matt Shaw. That is just so specific about his head moving. And Coomer saying, you can't play in our game at this level if your head is moving. I mean, it's like, I guess it's a it's obviously something fundamental. Certainly not something that I picked up on, though.
Right. And it's always micro, and there's so much muscle memory to all of it, you know. And then all of a sudden, you've got to have results to recreate the confidence. Obviously, Shaw got those at Iowa. He's got those through his first series back up in the bigs, and hopefully you just continue to get the positive reinforcement for some of the changes you've made.
That's a great point, too. I give credit to the Cubs organization for getting a couple of these guys right, but I give credit to the student as well because he was willing to make that change and listen and maybe break some habits, break some...
Yeah, it's hard.
Yes. Like when you're comfortable with something, and obviously, look, this is a first-round pick. This is a guy who has had heavy-duty success in his baseball life, doing it his way or the way other coaches have taught him, and he's able to, hey, man, you want to survive at this level? Hold still.
Hold steady,
man. So that's a proactive wow right there. Good on both sides. Here is another. I had a really good talk the other night when I was all alone at Hallis Hall doing a 3-hour solo show at the hall in the NFL Network studio. And I got to talk baseball with Lance Brozdowski of the Marquee Sports Network. And he's so good and so technical. Like, if you're really into that next level conversation, that's what Lance brings. And I asked him as well about what he is seeing with Matt Shaw.
Seems like he's studying the leg kick here. So he basically took the 2-strike leg kick he had when he was up in April and made that his leg kick all the time. And, you know, I mean, we have Cliff Floyd in the studio a ton. And I really love talking hitting with him. And he made it, like, the first time him and I were watching him, even last year at AAA, we were like, oh, the leg kick's, like, Cliff literally was like, the leg kick's going to go eventually. Just, if you look at the sample of major league hitters who have that big of a leg kick, you literally don't have any. Like, I think the one that comes to mind for me is, like, Zach Neto from the Angels. Had one for a bit, but I think even he toned his down. Bo Bichette, when he came up, was similar.
Mm.
Bo Bichette is probably a good comp there. And I just wonder whether it just took time. Like, there's this thing in player development of, like, you wait for the guy to fail and then make the adjustment, or do you try to preemptively make the adjustment? And it seems like they were comfortable letting him come up and fail and then make the adjustment. And given how good the offense has been, I think you could almost, like, take the hit that you had not playing him, or his production early in the season, and then the offensive production of Birdie and Brujan and Nicky Lopez, all which was well below average. And now you're getting to a point where it's like, okay, if you could project him as like a league average back going forward, even if he's, you know, maybe an average-ish to below average glove at third base, like that fits in the concept of this team.
See, what I think is so interesting about that, again, Lance Brozdowski of the Marquee Sports Network talking about Matt Shaw and the leg kick, which is the thing that is easy, the low-hanging fruit for all of us. Like, you got to tone that down. And it's funny that he put it that way, that, like, you got to wait for the guy to fail before you change it. Because nobody, like, people say, well, why didn't you take care of that beforehand? Well, because he's had success doing
it.
Let's see what he can do. I can't remember. It was somebody, there was a guest on the afternoon show, and I wish I could remember who those guys were talking to, Spiegel and Holmes, but somebody brought up the example of Anthony Iapoche used to be a hitting coach for the Cubs. He was there when Chris Bryant came up, and Chris Bryant, you remember, you know his stance. It's a very uncomfortable looking crouch that he sits in. And somebody said before he even took an at bat at the big league level, are you going to fix that? Are you going to fix that crouch? And actually, I guess I think Iapoche was the minor league instructor that you're going to fix that thing. And he's like, are you kidding me?
Right.
It's Chris Bryant. I don't know that he said I'm going to wait till he fails, but I'm not going to mess with his success. If he fails, then maybe we'll start to try to adjust things. Now, Chris Bryant, this is a different story. He didn't seem to be overly willing to adjust to anything, really, as it comes down to it. But I just thought that was really interesting. And the fact that the leg kick had to be adjusted to some degree with Matt Shaw.
Well, look, and you've seen, again, you've seen the progress and the results. And that does take a level of humility from the player to be able to respond to suggestions and to make corrections and then to apply them in a way where you get production. Again, now you've got to sustain this production, obviously. The Cubs will go into a big division series tonight, and you'll try to keep the momentum rolling.
I'll tell you what, I told you that I would tease this. The most important thing that has happened for the Chicago Cubs in the last three games, that when they took 2 out of 3 from the Miami Marlins, is that Kyle Tucker, 6-for-8 with 2 home runs over the past 2 games. And I say that not because I didn't think he was going to get his bleep together, because he's Kyle Tucker and the evidence is in that he's a great player and he'll get his bleep together, but because we were all kind of doing this thing where we're like, what's going on with him? Does he need a day off? Did he hurt himself? Is what's going on in the outfield? Because there were a couple plays in the outfield that I was like, what's going on out there? Why is he not seeing the ball well? What's happening with him? You know, is it? But really, and we I, I point to myself, like sometimes we lose perspective and we're like, there's this baseball panic that sets in when it is a sport that is so prone to failure and bad moments and slumps because of the long nature of the season. But I think we all just needed to see it.
Yeah.
And now Kyle Tucker is back and he's not resorting to his spring training days.
And you heard from him earlier in the week in Miami just about the confidence getting a boost a little bit, right? And like, okay, now I feel like I'm back in my groove. And that's a big deal. Again, as we talked about, like this lineup's potent. This lineup is potent and he's a big part of that. And so when you get him to swing the bat like he has this week, you feel a lot better about where they're going. It's three games now this year that they've banged out 21 hits. Is that right?
I think you're right.
Insane.
Yeah, they've been. It's really fun to watch. I mean, really, like I know that there's so much like pitching. There's nothing worse than a team that can't hit, and we've seen enough of that through the years with the Chicago Cubs to have the luxury of crushing the baseball, sort of like they did circa 15, 16, and 17 before it all started to kind of decrescendo out of that, and then Theo Epstein would end his postseason press conference talking about the need to make contact. They've actually gotten back to where they were trying to get to for a long, like really in the first year of Jed Hoyer, where he had contact guys, but not hard hit contact guys necessarily. A couple of things here before we take a break. Had a few people weighing in on our all-star conversation, including our very own Bruce Levine, who texted me too. Both catchers maybe should be all-stars. Carson Kelly, we had a couple of people on the text line saying now Miguel Amaya as well.
How do you do that?
Yeah, it's not going to happen. No, not in a million years. Not in a million years. By the way, my Jewel recommendation had at least one person asking, and that's all.
I saw two people.
Okay, I was going to say two, but I would have been making it up just to I like to create straw men. What was the Grody Jewel's recommendation? He only said it once, and I missed it. Yeah, it's the Jewel seafood salad.
Yeah,
just go up to the
describe
counter.
It. You said it's loaded with mayo.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's shrimp.
There's shrimp, lobster, crab. I believe imitation forms of it, but somehow, some way, with the right mixture of mayonnaise, it is delicious. And I just guarantee it to people.
You ever put it on bread or a bun or anything? Nothing like that.
No funny stuff.
Okay. No funny business.
Just get it plain. Get it like that.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You know, there are a lot of passions. Some days it's sports, other days it's cooking or music or just diving into a great documentary. The thing is, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Amazon Prime isn't just about fast delivery. Though getting stuff the same day is pretty great, but it turns out it's so much more. Prime Video, Amazon Music, the whole range of services. It's like a hub for all kinds of curiosity. Prime helps people stay connected to what matters and keeps the journey of exploration going. Whether it's watching something inspiring, listening to a new artist, or getting gear delivered fast to chase a new hobby, Prime makes it easier to dive in. So yeah, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to get more out of whatever sparks interest. Amazon.com/Prime.
MLB.TV is home to baseball's biggest stars. Watch every out-of-market game, live or on demand.
He got it! Woo! This is unbelievable!
Plus, you'll get 24/7 access to MLB Network. Stream every big pitch.
He struck him out!
Every home run.
Gone!
Everything baseball. All season long on MLB.TV. Start a free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Did you know that it's proven that attractive people tend to like hot, spicy food? Yes, it's true. Hot people like hot food. Introducing 5-Hour Energy's new Spicy Cinco de Mango. This little shot is sweet, spicy, and a tad unhinged. Just like your favorite party guest. It hits with a bold chili flavor, then smooths things out with that juicy mango kick. Honestly, I tried it the other day, and wow, it brought the heat and the hype. Total game changer. Research even says more than half of spicy food fans think they're hot. And you know what? They're not wrong. Hot people like hot food. Get your spice on with 5-Hour Energy Spicy Cinco de Mango. Think you're hot? Prove it with this spicy mango shot. And yes, it even comes with hot sauce. Turn up the heat this Cinco de Mayo or any day because life's too short for bland. You're hot. Your energy shot should be too. Get energized. Get spicy. 5-Hour Energy Spicy Cinco de Mango is here for you. 5-Hour Energy Spicy Cinco de Mango is only available online for a limited time. Head to 5hourenergy.com to order yours today.
Allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is
Layla Rahimi, Marshall Harris, Rahimi and Harris. Middays 10 a.m. to 2 on 670 The Score.
I have major concerns about Caleb Williams. Like major, major concerns. Why would you tell a writer this? Why would you be talking about this with a writer and then not go through with it? I feel like he either gets really bad advice or his awareness rating on Madden needs to go down like 30 points.
That's Ross Tucker on the Mully and Haw Show talking about Bears quarterback Caleb Williams along with Dan Weeder. I am Mark Grody. We are in for Rahimi and Harris today. The segment being brought to you by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Save on dental implants today. And we are taking your phone calls too here, 312-644-6767. If you want to talk Bears with the Take the North guys about this topic or others, we figured, you know, as long as we're here, if you've got questions about the Bears, about this very topic or other things, we are here for you at 312-644-6767. Text messages I can't keep up with right now. They're coming in hot and heavy at the moment. And let me make this clear. I am one of the people that, and I think many people still, I'm not unique in this way, I still think Caleb Williams has a chance to be great. I really do. Even before Ben Johnson got here. That obviously helps. But there's just too many skills, some of which maybe at the NFL level are still raw, for me to think that he can't do that. And too many throws that I saw him make last year that make me believe, oh, just smooth some things out. This guy still has a chance to be great. But guess what? I'm also going to grade him on the fact that he is a number one overall pick,
yep,
that he's a generational, you know, put that in air quotes if you'd like, a generational talent. So I will grade him like that. And I will do relative to rookie, of course. There are some excuses that can be had. But I'll, and Dan will too, we're going to call it like we see it. So Dan, you didn't get a chance to react yet fully to what Ross Tucker said about Caleb. We're very critical of Caleb Williams, obviously.
Yeah, I've got a handful of thoughts. You hear Ross there say he has major concerns. That would seem to be a double major in concern from an NFL analyst about the starting quarterback here. Uh-huh. What I think it does for me is it further illuminates the range of possibility here. Like Caleb could be a 15-year starter that leads the Bears to 9 playoff appearances, and none of us would be surprised. He also might not get a second contract with the Bears, and few of us would be surprised, right? Like that's the range of playing quarterback in a market like this with the expectation and the pressures that are there. And so it's just a reminder at how difficult that job is, how steep this climb is. It reminds me also of Ryan Poles going to a microphone on the day that Ben Johnson was introduced as the new head coach, being asked about what Ben's arrival would do for Caleb and saying, Caleb will be challenged to be a professional football player to do the little things the right way. That's the leader of your front office talking about your starting quarterback being challenged to be a professional football player. And so there's obvious thoughts inside the building that there is a maturation process that has to continue for Caleb Williams. There are demands that he has to meet. There are checkpoints he has to reach. And 2025 is going to be a huge season given what they've put around him, from the play caller to the interior of the offensive line to the playmakers, as we've mentioned. 2023 on the Take the North podcast before your arrival was the No Excuses Tour for Justin Fields. I don't think we're at the No Excuses Tour yet for Caleb, but we're at the Fewer Excuses Tour. And 2025 better be a year where Caleb starts to show evidence that his trajectory is going in the right direction, and by extension, the Bears' trajectory is going in the right direction.
Yeah, I mean, you do need to see discernible difference from Caleb Williams in all of the areas that we know were problems for him. Yes, he got to get rid of the ball more quickly. Like I said, the beginnings of games, like there, maybe other people were to blame, but guess what? That's the quarterback who the one common denominator was Caleb Williams in the beginnings of games this year.
Do you remember in December when we were hearing from some of the coaches that were still left in the building, whether it be Chris Beatty or Thomas Brown or Kerry Joseph, and they were talking about how Caleb needed to learn how to learn, right? Like, and there was this extension of a conversation of, look, as a young player in this league, and specifically at that position, you have to put together routines and habits that help you be successful. And so that process was clearly ongoing down the stretch of his rookie season, clearly did not get the guidance and oversight from Matt Eberflus and Shane Waldron that the Bears were banking on. And so now as Caleb turns the page and starts to work with a new coach and a new group of assistants around Ben Johnson, he's got to figure out how he invests in this process of improvement.
Yeah,
right.
Like, absolutely.
That's a huge step in this. It's a huge piece of this puzzle.
Mm-hmm. And it's not. And we've talked about this on Take the North many times. It's not an indictment of his character or anything like that. It's just the overall. Like, he's got to learn how to be a quarterback. That's what you said. I'm also thinking too. I do believe, Dan, that the conversation with Kerry Joseph, I believe you and I were in that conversation together in the atrium, just one of the many moments where you and I became a team, some of which we will play later on today. Well, because you and I have both had some really fun moments at different ends of the locker
gelling
room.
Process of becoming a team.
We became a team, ladies and gentlemen. All right, let's get to some calls here because they are lining up right now. 312-644-6767. We got a couple lines open too if you guys want to jump in. But let us start with Paulie. Paulie, you are on the Raheemy and Harris Show with Mark Grody and Dan Weeder. What's cooking?
Hey, guys. Great show. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks, Paulie.
Two knowledgeable guys talking football. I love it. So I almost drove off the road when I heard Ross Tucker.
Oh, boy.
Okay? I could not agree more. And I've been telling my friends this for the last couple of weeks. Caleb Williams is not Johnson's type of quarterback. He's going to make do with him for 3 years. He hopes he does his best. They are definitely not getting that guy $50 million in his fifth year and $70 million in his sixth. You wouldn't be able to build up the rest of the team, and he won't be that good. He's too short. He can't play from under center. He's inaccurate downfield. He can't read defenses. 52 of his 68 sacks, he held the ball for longer than 4 seconds, okay? So here's the game plan. And Johnson's a math guy, and his brother's a math guy on steroids, right? An MIT grad, gazillionaire, quantum computer dude. So they both have access to these computers, and it's all probability nowadays in math. Get the ball in your playmaker's hands as quickly as possible in a one-on-one situation. That's the way to win. The offense always has the last move, so the defense has to react to what the offense does. It's a total advantage. The Bears aren't going to get over 8.5. They're going to be fun to watch. They're going to score a ton of points. They still need to build up their defense, and this is going to be a year of adjustment. But as far as Caleb Williams, they're going to get the ball out of his hands. They're not going to depend on him to make decisions. He is not Johnson's type of QB.
Paulie, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Well thought out. Get back on the road there, buddy. We don't want you driving off the road. Shout out to everybody on the roads right now. It's the holiday weekend, so I'm guessing there's probably a ton of traffic out there. So, hey, everybody, be careful out there. The inaccuracies were real last year at times, Dan, and it was a surprise, I think, to everybody, including Caleb Williams. I mean, because Caleb Williams said, yeah, that's never been part of my repertoire.
Right.
Even when we talked to him about it, his touchdown to interception ratio, he's like, I don't know why you guys are talking about interceptions. Interceptions has never been part of my story either. So I think that Caleb was just as confounded, man, about the inaccuracies that he had last year. So that seems like something to me that can be fixed, that you look at and say, there is reason to believe Caleb Williams can become more accurate 100 at the NFL level.
Well, right. And I think the one thing I'd push back on from Paulie's call there is the fact that Caleb is not Ben Johnson's type of quarterback. Well, he better be, because Ben Johnson bet part of his career on Caleb Williams being a guy that he could bring the best out of. And so when you talk about becoming a better under center quarterback, that's got to happen here in May and June and late July and into August. And Caleb's got to master that part of things under Ben. They've got to figure out what this offense looks like. I think when you go back and you study the evolution of the Lions in the 3 years that Ben was the play caller, the marriage to the run game is incredible to watch, right? Like, everything started with how dedicated they were to the running game, how they turned loose that offensive line to do what it did best, and then all of a sudden you create play action. Jared Goff last year threw for 4,600 yards, 37 touchdowns, and passer rating of 111.8. Like, there'd be three statues of him out in front of Soldier Field if he put those numbers up as a Chicago Bear. Caleb Williams has got to lean into the teachings of a offensive mastermind and a play caller who has shown in this league that he can be highly productive with the pieces that he's given to work with. And so Ben's now got to take this new set of pieces and put together that puzzle. Caleb's got to be an active part of that process of being vocal. What do I like? What am I uncomfortable with? Of the things I'm uncomfortable with, what can we, you know, increase the comfort in, and what do we just throw out? And that's why I think this next stretch here is so critical, right? Like, this May, June, July, August stretch is so critical, because you know as well as I do, there's not going to be forgiveness if it takes past the bye week for Caleb Williams to look good, right? Like, people are going to be on edge in this city, and the Bears are going to have to adjust to that. Would you agree? Like,
yeah,
that,
no,
that,
Dan. Like, Dan, pressure is the word. There is a lot of pressure in
those two opening games, right? Like,
Minnesota, and yeah, and that week, what are we going to be talking about? Caleb Williams wanted to play for Kevin O'Connell in the Minnesota Vikings, as per the article. So, and then even, like, it's fun stuff, but even Ben Johnson, like, there's so much pressure on Ben Johnson, too. He doesn't wear it, and he hasn't really elicited.
He hasn't been here long enough.
Yeah, but he set up the pressure against Matt LaFleur. That's already out there. The Minnesota thing, and kept, oh, you wanted to play for Kevin O'Connell? You know, which maybe is a question we should have asked the coach the other day, but there is so much built-in pressure, like outside stuff, let alone, as you said, home against Minnesota at Detroit, yeah, to begin the season. And really quick, before we get back to your calls, I see you guys. We're going to get to 312-644-6767. Will you share the nugget, if you have it off the top of your head, about the tush push, and Ben Johnson didn't really use it Detroit.
No,
right?
Yeah, exactly. And I talked to Dave Burkett, who covers the Lions very closely.
That's right.
And has for years. And he said if they used it, they used it one time, mm-hmm, you know, in 3 years with Ben as a play caller. So
yeah,
he likes to find things in the playbook that work for him, and that's fine. You know, just make sure it works. I shared with you and Ray and Robbie before the show that the Lions scored 68 touchdowns on offense last season. The Bears over the last two seasons combined, 68 offensive touchdowns.
I love when you share, but I didn't like hearing that. We all were like, oh my God.
Like, staggering, right? Like,
oh,
staggering.
Yeah, that's staggering. That's a good word. Sam on the West Side. What's up, Sam? You're on the Score.
Hey guys, how's it going?
We're great. I mean, really, just great.
Well, I'm going to be the anti-Paulie, and I'll tell you, I didn't like the piece by Tucker at all.
Okay.
Give you just a second. I played quarterback at a pretty fair level.
Nah, I don't know about that. Did you, Sam?
I did. My college career got killed before it started on injury, but
sorry, bud.
I was good enough to head out to Alabama for a second.
Wow.
So,
whoa.
Anyways, I'm just going to say this. As far as the comments that Caleb Williams made, 20, 21-year-old kids, who cares what comes out of their mouth? It's nonsense. Anyway, anything out of his father's mouth, that's another thing. I just don't like it. It seems like this city, they can't accept success. They always got to be beating down on stars and trying to break them down. I think this kid, if I was drafting today, I still would have took him number one. He's better than the kid from Washington.
Jaden
Daniels.
He's
going to prove that.
Yeah.
Yep. The one thing I noticed about him right off the bat was I thought the game was too fast for him. And toward the end of the year, I saw him making some improvements. But the where quarterbacks earn their money, especially in the NFL, is on the last drive of the game when you're going for that final score and on third downs. And this kid passed the eye test on both of them.
Yeah. All right, Sam, appreciate the call. And sorry about your derailed Alabama quarterback career. I don't know, man. Maybe he was. I'm not really sure.
The one thing he said there that made me recoil is he said, this city can't accept success. And my response is, what success? Like, I'm going on season 13 on the beat. The Bears have never won a playoff game. They still don't have a 4,000-yard passer. They've never had anyone throw for 30 touchdowns. This city would gladly accept success. In fact, a lot of times they proclaim success before success has occurred. See Justin Fields' three-year career.
Well, we're doing a lot of that in this offseason, too. I haven't heard a lot of people pick losing records for the Bears this year. I got them at 9-8. Did you find 9 wins,
we
Dan?
We found the ninth. Yeah. You and I both talked about how we actually had to kind of find the ninth win. I think this is an 8-9 win team.
Yeah.
Schedule's got teeth to it, right? And then when you look at that schedule laid out, you're like, oh, God. Like, you've got to actively search for that ninth win. Man, this city can't accept success. They're just desperate to see actual success instead of sort of the fool's gold success that we're so often tricked by.
Right, and I do give tons of credit to Bears fans, because Bears fans have been through a ton, but they just don't fall off. They don't go away. They are bad. I mean, maybe there's a period of time at the end of the season where they get out of here and they go to some sunny place, but then they refresh. There is a Bears refresh button that is, they lost 10 games in a row last year, Dan, and most of the texts that we're getting right now, they want Rex Tucker taken out. Ross Tucker, they want him taken out, basically, is the conclusion.
We all remember the infamous 2021 Zoom call with the Bears brass after the season ended. I think it was 21.
Where
it was
one?
Yeah, right. Like, I mean, you remember those moments where you're just struck by it. And there was a reaction from fans like, I'm done with this team. I'm never watching this team again. We're never coming back. And then they drafted Justin Fields, and it was like, this is the greatest day in Chicago sports history. I can't wait to buy my jersey.
And Soldier Field is sold out every single game, no matter what. God bless
they
you,
can't
Bears
stay
fans.
Away. They can't
no,
stay
you
away.
Can't, and you shouldn't. And that's why we talk about it. We love it, too. And as I always say, at the heart of it, I am one of you. I grew up one of you. I am an objective reporter now, but I always say when I retire, I'll probably go back to being a Bears fan in some way, shape, or form.
Leila Rahimi, Marshall Harris, middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
The name is Spain, but they call me the Commish, C-O-M-M-I-S-H. You don't want to mess with this. Step into the grid and I'll rule your world. The show's alpha male is a ball-busted girl.
That is great. We are on with Sarah Spain. It is Rahimi and Harris with Mark Grody on The Score. Sarah here to talk about many things, WNBA as we discussed, and also your new book. Because that was like your social media handle for a while. It was like you were going to take this gap year and like go see the world and then write this book. But I feel like you were never actually off.
No.
Wait, before we get to that, can I get context for that rap?
Yes. That was, I'm the commish.
Okay.
Got it. Don't F with this is the main thing to take away. But my regular appearances on the Lebatard show, they have the Grid of Death where they pick a bucket from this they pick a helmet from the bucket, and if you have that team and they lose, you have to pick something from the punishments. Oh. And that was essentially to freestyle rap about the week in sports, but instead I did a diss rap of Dan and Stu.
That sounds appropriate.
Yeah.
I think that was a better move, actually.
It was.
That's always the move is to continue the bit on the Levitard show, I feel like.
Yes.
And that's where I want to start, is not just with the career path you've taken, which I think is very compelling, but what drove you to write the book? Runs in the Family, an incredible story of football, fatherhood, and belonging. And it is one that has twists and turns. And when you say incredible, you mean it. What can you tell people about what this book is about?
So a couple years ago, my friend Skip came to me and was like, you're never going to believe this story. He played football at Miami of Ohio. One of his teammates had just called a bunch of the guys from the team and said, hey guys, y'all aren't going to believe this, but Coach was my dad. So they're all like, I'm sorry, what? So it turns out that this guy, Dylan McCullough, who had played at Miami of Ohio, was adopted, grew up in Youngstown, Ohio, post-industrial collapse. So a lot of struggling families. His adoptive dad left when he was two. So he's sort of doubly rejected by father figures, living with a single mom who dates some unsavory dudes, to say the least. And at times they struggle without heat or electricity. He's got a real rough childhood, finds football, finds his way out, starts getting recruited by teams. And Sherman Smith, who is also from Youngstown, who had gone on to the NFL and made something of himself, came back to recruit him from Miami of Ohio. He ends up going there, breaks a bunch of records, goes to the NFL, starting with the Bengals in the preseason, tears up his knee, and then over many years tries to get back into the NFL and ends up becoming a coach instead. Sherman keeps kind of mentoring him as he makes his way from Miami to Indiana to USC, has four sons, can never say anything to the doctors about his medical history, never goes looking for his birth parents, and then starts looking in the laws change in Pennsylvania where he was born. Finds his birth certificate, finds his mom after a day on Facebook. She's been looking for him for years. She never got married, never had kids. She's so excited to have a son and grandkids and a family. And there's no dad listed on the birth certificate. And he says, you know, mom, do you know who my dad is? And she says, yeah, I never told them. I was a high school honor student. They sent me away to have the baby in private and come back to school without anyone being the wiser. He was already off to college, so I felt like I just shouldn't interrupt his life. It was my responsibility. But your damn dad is this man named Sherman Smith. And he's like, I've known him my whole life. That's been my mentor for the last 28 years. And so it's an incredible story. It feels like I'm giving away the twist, but there's so much more really in good. There to read. There's so much about nature versus nurture, DNA versus epigenetics and emotional DNA. What are the messages and language that we get passed on to family, generational trauma? What do we want to pass on and what do we want to choose to end with us? I really wanted it to be his story, but also something that anybody could read and really think about themselves and their family and what is worth continuing to pass on through generations, just like blood, and what is worth trying to end with. You.
That's the trauma of the last thing you said. I think everyone deals with that. What should we not take with us to the next generation, our kids? Talking to people all the time about that, because we always talk about that expression, that idiom, runs in the family. And some of it is blood, but there are so many other things that we take with us depending on how we were raised and how our family continues to be involved in our adult lives as well.
Yeah, I think like the example I always use that I think really hits for people is if your family always said things like, it doesn't matter how hard we work, we're always falling behind. Your relationship with money for the rest of your life, even in abundance, is probably going to be a scarcity mindset. And if your family always says, you know, times are tough, but we always make it work, you're probably later in life, regardless of how things are going, to have a belief that it's going to be okay. Same with sports. If your family was like, you only get ice cream if you win, it's a very different approach than we're going to celebrate because you did your best. Wasn't your best game, but let's go grab ice cream, right? Those things are just as deeply embedded in us, but they almost become facts to us. If you hear them enough times, you start to internalize them as fact instead of subjective opinion. And you don't even realize that with intention, you could just choose to leave that behind and not believe that anymore.
You're reminding me of participation pizza, as I like to call it. Because, you know, people are like, oh, you're from the participation trophy era. I was like, nah, but we did get pizza after the game because, you know, we had to eat something.
Because we still played a game.
And it's like, I was going to eat anyway. What's wrong with pizza? So yeah. I go back to the CC's $2.99 pizza buffet and just,
I was just happy it was done.
Who didn't love CC's?
Yeah, Jewel lemon lime soda. I mean, that was good.
My post game when we would have like four back-to-back AAU basketball games was always Steak and Shake, Oreo milkshake. Back in the day when you could just like pound those and not gain a single pound because you were just spent your whole day hooping.
Metabolism was a thing.
Yeah. Remember that?
Yes.
I barely do.
Yeah.
Yeah. My metabolism was always slow, unfortunately, kind of like my mouth compared to my brain. But I do think there's a lot here also when it comes to there is science behind the study of being subliminally drawn to certain people because of the familiarity. And then sometimes knowing your family without even knowing your family. What did you discover in that part of it as well?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty wild how much they repeated each other's lives. So, of course, he was a bit of a mentor to him, but he only coached him for one semester. at Miami of Ohio. And then he got a job offer at Indiana and left. So they had one semester together where Dielen was a redshirt because he had gotten recruited, originally wanted to play running back. They tried to move him to flanker, and he pushed to stay a running back, but then he was going to redshirt. So he wasn't even with the starters and Sherman Smith all that much, but they had enough of a bond that they kept that relationship going for years and years. He did a coaching internship with him with the Seahawks. And that's the part that's wild to me. Grow up in Youngstown, go to Miami of Ohio, go to the NFL, get a knee injury, become a coach, win a Super Bowl, lose a Super Bowl, both to Tom Brady. And then now he's coaching under Pete Carroll with the Raiders, and his dad coached under Pete Carroll with the Seahawks. They both had a son that went to Miami to play football. Like, just repeating the life. And when the story first came out on ESPN a handful of years ago, we did an E60 piece and a written piece, and a handful of people wrote in to share their own wild stories about family and adoption. And one guy said he'd been working at a factory for like a decade and had hit it off with this older guy that worked there. And they always ate lunch together. And they just had this real friendship that they couldn't explain, this generational friendship. And it turned out it was his dad.
That's crazy. And,
but imagine the energy that you probably do feel toward people that have the same, you know, family and pheromones and blood and all the other things. Like, we, a lot of times I think we kind of don't want to reconcile the idea of what happens in the spaces in between, whether that's energy exchange or all, you know, why do twins, like those crazy ass twins that were repeating each other's, finishing each other's sentences that went viral recently. Like, how does that work that their brains are separate, but they're doing the same thing at the same time? We don't understand those things. So we're kind of like, oh, that's a little hippy dippy. We don't want to get into it, but energy is so real. When someone walks into a room, you can feel it. When someone has terrible energy, you can feel it before they've said anything.
Facts.
Right?
Too
so we know
times.
It's real.
Yeah. And it's interesting. Was the book itself, was that you just wanting to explore further into this specific story? Or was there something else driving you to say what we've done here with journalism, whether it be the article that was written or the E60 piece, and wanting to build that out more in a specific way?
Yeah. I mean, when we did the first piece, it really exploded. It was incredible, the viral response from everyone, from, you know, Reese Witherspoon to Bob Iger to Denzel and Jamie Foxx asking their agents, like, hey, can we be in the movie? We did end up signing with Macro to do a movie about it. We were pitching during COVID, so we're going to come back around. Actually, Russell Wilson and Sierra wanted it for their production company and ended up losing out to Macro, so they came on as executive producers. So for all of our pitches during COVID for the studios, we'd start with a very Russell Wilson video of him, like, walking around the living room taking a selfie, like, I'm sure he said, like, this story's unlimited or whatever. But so they're on board. So it's just an undeniably great, insane story. And so after the movie, around the same time as the movie, people were coming to us. There were editors, and I had 11 jobs at ESPN. And I was like, I don't even know when I'd write a book, but let's do the movie first, and then we'll do the book. And then because we were pitching during COVID and then the strike, we haven't found a studio yet. So the movie's kind of on hold. My job with ESPN changes to part-time, and I'm like, all right, I got some time on my hands. And serendipitously, the woman who wanted it most left for Simon & Schuster, and I was with my husband in the New York Public Library. We popped in because the rooms are really pretty. It's supposed to be a cool place to check out, and all these people are working away at their computers. And I was like, oh, I missed that. He's like, what? I'm like, I miss like having a big project and like sitting all day and writing. And he's like, you're a weirdo. Nobody misses that. I'm like, I missed that from school. And I went to the bathroom, and I came back. I was like, I just got an email that editor from a couple years ago came back and wants the book again, but now with Simon & Schuster. And my husband's like, well, there's your big project. And I was like, oh, I manifested it. I just like went to take a whiz and came back and did the thing. Exactly.
Manifest Denzel, because that would be
incredible. This segment with Sarah Spain is brought to you by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Save on dental implants today. It is Rahimi and Harrison Grody on The Score with Sarah Spain, talking about a wonderful book. And I think the point of it to me is also the fact that storytelling still matters. Yeah, there might not be as much of a place for it on, you know, networks and radio stations that do a lot of debate, but that true stories like this that are real, that actually resonate and touch so many aspects of lives that people can relate to, are still very, very important. And that includes just having football be a driving fabric through all of this. At the core of it, sports is community.
Right.
At least it's supposed to be.
Right. Well, and that's part of the book, is the idea of who chooses to parent. It's not always just parents, right? And in his case, his birth parent, his mom, who knew about him, chose to give him up, wanting a better future for him. Mm-hmm. His adoptive dad chose to not be in his life. His mentor, this football coach, who after one semester could have said, hey, you know, nice meeting you, but instead takes him under his wing and leads him, choose you know, made the choice to parent him. And I think football as mentor, what's interesting in his life is that on the football side, it's very linear. He has these incredible role models and coaches at every level that say, do this work and this will happen. And it does for him at every level he plays. And then in the coaching level as well. And on the personal side, he doesn't have that same leadership and he wavers and he struggles and he takes steps back and he tries to find his way. And he has to figure out how to acknowledge those moments when he has a want or a need that can't be fulfilled and he can't solve it simply. Right? He's got some childhood what's it called when you steal stuff, but it's like minor?
Misdemeanor?
Not a kleptomania.
No, just like...
Oh, shoplifting?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. That's what I'm looking for.
I didn't know if it was that simple or not.
No, that's the word. Well, because I want to say, like, he wasn't a thief. He was okay. Like a kid who tried to steal, like, a G.I. Joe character
or
a pair of jeans. Like, he felt like he couldn't fit in because they didn't have enough money, but he couldn't control that urge. And so learning how, as he got older, to make the same choices on his personal side as he did on the football side, but understanding that the leadership wasn't there and he was making his own way a lot of the time growing up with a single mom in a tough area. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot in there about football and mentorship and how it can be applied in other parts of your life.
Layla Rahimi, Marshall Harris. Rahimi and Harris, middays 10 a.m. to 2 on 670 The Score.
Just to be clear on the stadium, if everything comes together, yes. You guys have said the focus is now the lakefront.
Yep.
Everything comes together, all the obstacles, the money. The plan is to put a shovel on the ground on the lakefront, or does Arlington Heights get a chance to come back? And
the plan would be to put a shovel on the ground on the lakefront.
You sure about that?
All right, I'll say it on the air.
Say it on the air.
This is the Rahimi and Harris Show with Mark Grody on The Score. I think we need to do a montage of all the lakefront talk and put it to some sort of song that bids goodbye. Because some of us always knew what the plan was.
Mark, you going to raise your hand?
I mean, like when asked the question of the stadium, I was wanted it downtown, but when I really had to say where it's going to be, I'd say, I think it's going to end up being in Arlington.
See, it's going to be where you spent hundreds of millions of dollars.
Walk me through the, I want it to be downtown and what they were going to do with that land.
With Arlington Heights land, what they would have, who cares what they would have done with
that
land?
No, the downtown land.
I'm just saying from a practical standpoint, you bought a 326 acre property.
Yeah.
What are you doing with that if you're not building a stadium on it, if you're the Bears?
Sell it.
You just think it's that easy to just flip?
Yeah.
Because if there's one thing that's
you're stuck with a nice big property.
If there's one thing that's really moving right now, it's large tracts of land built for resident, you know.
He watches a lot of HGTV.
You could build a bunch of houses on there. The Bears, they would have survived, obviously.
With supply costs, you think the street is really into houses building right now?
Why would they have allowed Kevin Warren to put on a two-hour presentation downtown as thorough as he did if they weren't serious about it?
Because Kevin Warren did everything he was supposed to do and everything he could once he got the job
they were serious,
to try to fix it.
Well, they were serious enough about it that they didn't really care about the Arlington Heights property. They would have I realize it's a complicated matter, but they would have figured it out. They would have done something with it, and maybe they would have sold the property. Obviously, George McCaskey, said, go ahead, Kevin Warren. If you want to make your play for downtown, we'll listen, unless you guys are saying it was a ploy the whole time.
I don't even think it was a ploy. I think that at best, you can argue it was an insurance plan. What's going on in Arlington Heights.
Yeah.
I never got to the point, though, where I believed it was a secondary thing as opposed to the primary thing, because I never could figure out where money was coming from to get it built down here and how they were going to get permission also to build it down here.
So I can't even believe we're having this discussion.
Do you think, Layla, that Kevin Warren was being serious?
I think if you look at the actions and the process and the order that everything happened in, it is easy to see what was going on. I don't accuse Kevin Warren of anything because I think he was brought in to do a job. But the way this is done is typically a team will say, we want to be at X or Y place. Then the municipalities get into a bidding war as to what incentives they want to offer. It's not usually the case where a team says, here's a bunch of land, we should buy that. And then they do. And then they communicate to everybody that that is their sole focus. Also, keep in mind, this whole thing originally started because reportedly, according to Freedom of Information Act searches and everything else, because it's a public entity, that the Bears wanted to put a sports book at Soldier Field, and the city said no. That's a part of this, too, that is underreported, but that was originally one of the main stories. They go out and get Arlington Heights. Then they tell everybody it's their sole focus. If it really wasn't, they would have sold it, because nobody wants to have land that you're paying taxes on sit there vacant for 2 years. They paid $197 million for it. I always thought it was going to be there. They just put their order of operations was incorrect. So Kevin Warren comes in, and it's his job to try to build some sort of leverage to then therefore get the tax rate that's more favorable.
So it was all leverage then. Kevin Warren was never serious about wanting a stadium.
I think he was, but I think he tried. I think he was doing what he could to try to get a more favorable outcome, period.
Okay, so
but they never did anything with the land. Yeah. They could have put it back up for sale.
I think also when you're talking about were they serious, yes, I think they were serious if they could get something that was palatable to them. My point is they were never going to get a palatable enough deal. And it does create leverage when you have multiple sites going up against each other. And that's how they got to the tax rate that they have right now. Before building.
I agree with that. I think I am agreeing with Layla too, but I am more positive, I think, opinion, I suppose, that Kevin Warren was very serious about wanting it to be downtown. That, yeah, leverage came along the way, and you had to have that in your back pocket, so to speak, but I do think that Kevin Warren wanted like the ideal, and maybe it was never realistic. That I'll give, but I do think that he wanted that thing downtown.
847's like that property in AH would be perfect for a mall and condos. They're not building malls. Like, I don't know if you've noticed
malls
that, but those
down.
Are not necessarily something that you can fill right now with tenants.
I think a team worth billions, that I mean, it sounds crazy, but if they had gotten clearance to build downtown, they would have figured out what to do with the Arlington Heights property, even if it's selling the Arlington Heights property.
I get what Kevin Warren was trying to do. I don't even take it as personally as a lot of people have. But the order of operations was all off. Here's the frustrating part is only later did the city and our tax dollars spend money for a presentation to the Bears after the Bears had already bought Arlington Heights. And then they're like, oh, here's all the things that we can do to Soldier Field. As if Cook County doesn't still owe over $500 million on renovations. Like that's the thing that I always go back to here. It is as simple as follow the money.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt that the money is a huge part. The leverage is a huge part. Simply put, I think Kevin Warren wanted it downtown.
There's a lot of things we all want that we know aren't really going to happen.
Did you just end it with Bears?
No,
he didn't say Bears.
I thought you said Warren wanted it downtown.
The reason that when I say I wanted it downtown, is I always knew the reasonable place to have it, obviously, is Arlington Heights. So I'm not arguing against anything you're saying. I'm just saying, I am saying that Kevin Warren wanted it downtown. I don't think you guys necessarily believe that. That's what I'm feeling right now.
We're talking right now, Raheemy Harris, and yes, Mark Grody, the dissenting voice this particular segment on the Bears stadium situation and their decision to now focus on Arlington Heights as opposed to what we had prior, which was the focus on the lakefront, which we heard over and over and over and over again, and now that's over.
Yeah, which sucks, by the way. I hate it.
It's an easy thing to say. It's an easy thing to say where your focus is, but it's an evident thing to say where your money went.
Yeah, well,
their money went to Arlington Heights.
And I admit part of this is what I wanted. I love that property. I love Soldier Field being, or the stadium, whatever it would become, to be along the lakefront. And I like my teams being in the city of Chicago proper.
And you know what? No one is over here hating on your wants or your needs. We want you to get what you want and you need, Mark Grody.
Do you?
Yeah, I do. Okay. I do. All Unfortunately, the Bears' wants and needs come before yours in this conversation.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I think the Bears' wants were to be downtown, and now they need to probably be in Arlington Heights.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's the point here. And so none of this should have come to a surprise to anyone who's actually been paying attention. And I know this did not surprise Mark Grody nor Layla Raheemy, certainly not me. And I'm just wondering, when is this all going to take place? The shovels in the ground in 2025 sound very realistic now based on this focus shift. And also, how long will it take to complete said project?
Right. I don't think there's time now to go back to to downtown. For sure. I'm resigned to the idea that it's going to be in Arlington Heights now. Like, if you want to put shovels in the ground by 2025, and I heard Mark Gannis on this morning with Molly and Haw, that there's so much more that they still have to do to get to the point where you're putting the shovels in the ground, to the point where he did mention early 2026 is when the shovels actually might go in the ground.
Construction costs will be so reasonable. Let's listen to Mark Gannis from this morning.
Well, you know, the White Sox have got the luxury of time. That building has been it has been maintained very well. So they have the luxury of time, but their lease comes up, what, you know, somewhere around 2030 also. Mm. I've forgotten the exact date. So it's the kind of thing that needs to get done now. I mean, and Jerry is ready, willing, and able. Look, I've had the pleasure of being able to spend a little time with him recently. And, you know, we've had a lot of discussions in politics these days about, you know, people who are in their 80s and whether, you know, where they are cognitively. Let me tell you something. Jerry Reinsdorf is as sharp as he has ever been. This man is brilliant. He's, what, 88 years old now?
Right.
And he is so sharp, so smart, so on top of things. This is the guy you want to do a deal with. He's done it before. He's done it multiple times before. He's the guy that can get things done. That's the guy they should be working with right now.
So Mark Gannis threw out there the concept of Jerry Reinsdorf working with the Bears. And I know they were both battling for public funds for stadiums. So that was a wrinkle that was brought in this morning as well.
I'd rather see the White Sox at the 78.
Mm. We took a Sox turn here. Whoa. Wasn't ready for that.
Well, no, I'm just saying.
Sorry about that. I had to get us from point A to B somehow.
The idea that the White Sox would be that far away. Now I'm with you, Mark Grody, on where you want your teams to play, right? Because I'm not going to Arlington Heights for a baseball game. Yeah, that's a different type of commute. We're talking about when do the White Sox play?
During the summer?
No. I mean, like, what time of day do they play?
Oh, at night. Yeah.
Like, can you imagine White Sox fans trying to get to Arlington? That doesn't make any sense.
They have to have a hard enough time getting to the ballpark that exists right now.
Exactly.
Let so alone my point what being, it would be like in Arlington Heights. But there are a lot of fans in the suburbs, too.
That makes no sense for Jerry Reinsdorf, although all that really makes sense to Jerry Reinsdorf right now is just keep the money coming. Keep printing the money.
I think if he knows a way to... If he knows a way to somehow subsidize a stadium, he'll do it.
Yes.
That's the ballpark they're in right now is publicly funded. So I get that concept and that part of it as well. But as far as the original concept, the Bears' argument would have been a lot more believable had they not sat on a $200 million piece of land.
Oh, yeah. I mean, again, like I said, wanted it downtown. And anybody that asked me, grow like privately or on the air, where do you think it's going to be? You have to Arlington Heights.
Yeah,
Arlington Heights.
Yeah, I think.
Also, it's still just you only get eight or nine games regular season. That's all the guarantee is for a football stadium, and that's why I think that has to factor in here as well. Ballpark is different. You're talking about 81, so. That also would make it make more sense for the public's money if there is any part of it. But
I think that's a great point, Layla. And the other thing is, even after they open this thing out in Arlington Heights, let's take Beyonce for instance. Is she going to perform out in Arlington Heights or is she going to perform at Soldier Field?
Well, the concert wouldn't have ended at 1 o'clock on Thursday night and, you know, Friday morning if it had been in a dome.
Well, you know, I think the problem is Bears 2 will probably be playing at Soldier Field. So Beyonce will not be allowed in the building.
At Bears 2, the game comes to you. Like, where do the people want Bears 2?
A floating dome?
Is it at a high school stadium? Let's go.
Yeah, hey, whatever. We were talking about Grant Park. Like, you could get rid of the softball fields, let Bears 2 play there.
I like those softball fields. Kickball.
I do, too. I've played on them many times.
My favorite part of the Bears stadium discussion was where everybody just wanted to blow up sites to put the Bears. Like, it just became, clearly it became about people's preferred place that they wanted to destroy.
Every town was raising their hands. We got room for you at this Top Golf. It was like, let's go, bring the Bears here.
At some point, people just started getting rid of, like, people they hated houses. You know, like it just started to get really personal with the places they wanted to put the Bears stadium.
It did.
That was my favorite part, the destruction. This is construction.
Demolition.
Still fun, just the not
demolition
the same.
That would occur.
We have more coming up with Raheemy Harris and Grody on the Score.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You know, there are a lot of passions. Some days it's sports, other days it's cooking or music or just diving into a great documentary. The thing is, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Amazon Prime isn't just about fast delivery. Though getting stuff the same day is pretty great, but it turns out it's so much more. Prime Video, Amazon Music, the whole range of services. It's like a hub for all kinds of curiosity. Prime helps people stay connected to what matters and keeps the journey of exploration going. Whether it's watching something inspiring, listening to a new artist, or getting gear delivered fast to chase a new hobby, Prime makes it easier to dive in. So yeah, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to get more out of whatever sparks interest. Amazon.com/Prime.
MLB.TV is home to baseball's biggest stars. Watch every out-of-market game, live or on demand.
He got it! This is unbelievable!
Plus, you'll get 24/7 access to MLB Network. Stream every big pitch.
He struck him out!
Every home run.
Gone!
Everything baseball. All season long on MLB.TV. Start a free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Did you know that it's proven that attractive people tend to like hot, spicy food? Yes, it's true. Hot people like hot food. Introducing 5-Hour Energy's new Spicy Cinco de Mango. This little shot is sweet, spicy, and a tad unhinged. Just like your favorite party guest. It hits with a bold chili flavor, then smooths things out with that juicy mango kick. Honestly, I tried it the other day, and wow, it brought the heat and the hype. Total game changer. Research even says more than half of spicy food fans think they're hot. And you know what? They're not wrong. Hot people like hot food. Get your spice on with 5-Hour Energy Spicy Cinco de Mango. Think you're hot? Prove it with this spicy mango shot. And yes, it even comes with hot sauce. Turn up the heat this Cinco de Mayo or any day because life's too short for bland. You're hot. Your energy shot should be too. Get energized. Get spicy. 5-Hour Energy Spicy Cinco de Mango is here for you. 5-Hour Energy Spicy Cinco de Mango is only available online for a limited time. Head to 5hourenergy.com to order yours today.